Greetings and salutations to y'all.
Bob McCullen. Y'all?
Y'all.
What have you been to, a Tex-Mex restaurant or something?
No, well, my grandmother back in Columbus, Ohio, thought she lived in Columbus, Georgia.
Oh.
And she had a real drawl.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And all kinds of real Southern expressions. She used to make me grits.
But was she from Columbus or was she from somewhere else? She was. Yeah. Wow.
And you know, Columbus is one of those Midwestern cities where you go and some people have a bit of an accent and some people have none whatsoever.
Well, it's above the Mason-Dixon line, too. Come on.
Yeah, I know. But she was like, she was a Southern belle.
Wow. By the way, there's 50% of our audience now going to Google to Google Mason-Dixon line. So,
well, or grits.
Oh, no, grits are great.
When's the last time you saw grits on a menu in Canada?
No, Canada. Never in Canada.
No. Well, unless you've traveled to the South and been a little bit adventurous.
Yeah.
You don't know what grits are.
Indeed.
I'm never 100% sure what grits are. I've had grits that are fantastic, and I've had grits that make me puke. So be careful with your grits. We won't address that subject any longer. Dave Hodge, Dave Perkins are with us. Some baseball talk. We'll do that after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you. And today, the two Daves, Hodge and Perkins, join us. And I presume the topic of conversation will be primarily baseball, if not exclusively, as we approach the first trade deadline in Major League Baseball. And invariably, the question for every team is, do you buy, do you sell, or do you stand pat? And the Blue Jays are, as so often teams are, in kind of one of those, well, we're not exactly sure. The Blue Jays were in a similar position years ago and made dramatic moves at the trade deadline, got Tulowitzki, and went on and won the division. I don't think anybody thinks that's the right decision this year. Hodge, you're cautiously shaking your head. What do you think?
Well, I think they're motivated to do something, but not anything resembling what you just described. And if they were motivated to do that, I'm not sure that they would have the ability to do that. You know, the biggest name, I suppose, is Craig Kimbrell. And clearly the Blue Jays could use help in the bullpen and arguably one of the best closers in the game, but I don't think they're getting Craig Kimbrell. So the Jays need help in the bullpen, other help. Whether they add a bat is arguable, whether they need to is arguable, but it seems that they're interested. Joey Gallo's name keeps popping up all over the place. And I'm starting to hear Eduardo Escobar talk, which would suggest to me that if the Jays could land him, he goes straight to third base. And, you know, what you do with Kevin Biggio would remain to be seen after that. But I think they will and should and need to do something significant, although not of the blockbuster variety.
Perk, your thoughts?
I think they should, and I think they will. I think it's still possible, as poorly as this team plays defensively, as poorly as its fundamentals are, as poor as its base running is, blah, blah, blah. That's a baseball-wide problem. Everybody's playing poorly now, fundamentally, and base running and such. So I think you just keep going. I think this is a year you have an opportunity. This is the worst Yankee team in maybe close to 30 years. I think you got that going for you. I mean, they're 4 or 5 out in the loss column in the
wild card.
And that's the way to go. There's an opportunity. It's not a great opportunity, but there is an opportunity. And let's face it, at some point, you know, the elephant in this room is Vladdy Guerrero's contract. And there are two contracts out there. There's the Acuna contract, which is $100 million for 8 years. And there's the Fernando Tatis contract, which is 300 and whatever million for 15 years, whatever it was. And which one's Vladdy going to get? Like, think about it. If you're Washington, you got the same deal with Soto. Which contract are you going to give those that guy? And if I'm Vladdy, knowing how savvy he is and how savvy his father was, he's going to get the Tatis contract. So that, to me, is the anchor of the future. I mean, they're in next year for $65 million on four guys, right? That's how it starts. $30 million to Springer, $20 million to Ryu, $10-something to Grishuk, and $5 million to Gurriel. They have four guys under contract for next year, $65 million. So you start piecing it all together. Is there money for Semien? No, I don't see it. Is there money for Robbie Ray? I don't see it. Is there money for Mats, another free agent? I mean, maybe there's money for one of these guys, but not all of them. And these guys are pretty good players right now. Ray is their best pitcher, and Semien's arguably, what, their second best player after Guerrero. So you got these guys now, and I don't see them sticking around. So I take a run at it right now.
Well, we talk all the time about organizations giving up assets, futures, young players, et cetera. And the Blue Jays certainly have enough of those that if they wanted to part with them, they could. Who on this roster might have value in a trade that the Blue Jays would be willing to give up? I got at least two or three names that I could throw out.
Go ahead.
Well, Gurriel has got the contract that, I mean, he's got a Miami contract, right? Like, he's $5 million next year and $5.5 million, I think, the year after. And Miami's got all this great young pitching. I mean, how many outfielders are you going to pay? You're paying Springer, you're paying Grishuk, and Oscar. Remember, T. Oscar, he's an arbitration two guy, I think, next year. And he's at what, $5 million this year? Well, he's going to 12, 15 in arbitration. That's the way it works. So you can't pay everybody, and you certainly can't pay guys to sit on the bench. And somebody's going to have to sit on the bench out of that group.
Well, that's, yeah.
If they land a bat.
And I guess what I'm trying to get at, Biggio is the other guy that I think you could move. Sure. What his market, and that's the question, is what is the market value for players like this? They are still young. They do have upside. It's quite possible, Hodge, that these kinds of guys would be attractive to other teams in some kind of a deal. And the Blue Jays, in reality, these are replaceable players. These are players that you have guys in your system on the roster right now that can fill in for them. So they're not critical to the development. Would you move?
No, but moving back to the idea that the farm system is stocked with prospects that everybody thinks are good ones, if not great ones. A lot of them are middle infielders. And at some point, I think you have to sit down and rank them and say, the guy of the future is Aurelvis Martinez, or it's Jordan Groshans, or it's Austin Martin, but it can't be all three. And while there would be criticism if they traded any of those three, there would also be justification for saying, look, we've decided we're keeping the two best, and we're going to get a great player if we trade the third guy. I think you have to look at that. If they all play different positions, no, don't bother with it. But you can move them around. Martin can play in the outfield, but you don't need an outfielder for a good long time, it would seem. So I'm not sure that you look at the current roster as much as you do take the hard look at your great prospects and say, we're going to have to swallow hard and trade one of them, and it won't be the one that they think is the best.
See, the only thing I would say is that is there an argument to be made to do two things: stand pat, and try to make sure that Simeon and Ray are here long term. Perk, you're not sold on that.
Well, it's just numbers. I mean, how they're at $135 million this year, so they're what, 60? What's that? Like $65 million yeah. away from the tax threshold. That so that this year it's they can go as high as they want. You know that. Mm-hmm. But long term, you have to start with whatever Vladdy's contract is going to be, right? And then a year later, you have to start with, you have to add Bichette's contract. Like, these are monster contracts. So you can't pay everybody. This, they're locked in with Springer for four more years. They're locked in with Ryu for a couple more years. You can't pay everybody. So, I just don't see how you can scramble up all the money for Simeon and Ray and Max and all these guys who are free agents. Go now. Granted, they got 25 million dead money this year. They're paying Tanner Roark 12, mm-hmm. and Yates is 5, I think, and Chatwood is 5, 3 or 4, whatever. You know, there's lots of dead money that they get rid of. I get that, but that's all going to be absorbed by, they got 5 or 6 arbitration eligible guys now. So it's going to be a real mathematical jigsaw puzzle, I think, to get everybody in the house.
I know people, and you know the same people, Burke, who would argue, not right now, but eventually, the decision that the Blue Jays will have to make and should make is trading Bo Bichette.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, there's no doubt about it. They're going to have to break this gang up. I mean, to me, it starts with Gurriel because of the four outfielders. To me, he's the fourth. But he's the most tradable, and you know.
Every team would line up for Bichette.
No question.
That would open the shortstop spot open to that guy that you think is the next big thing. And in the meantime, you can shuffle the guys around. And I'm saying it's not going to do that today or tomorrow or next year maybe. But eventually, he may be the guy that solves this logjam and makes them the team that they're going to be for the future.
Sure, absolutely. They have a lot of options, but finances are going to dictate a lot of their moves. You can't get away from that.
So if you can't keep Simeon, why not put him on the market before July 31st?
Well, they are taking calls on Simeon right now, according to things I have heard. They'll take calls on Robbie Ray. These are free agents, likely, as we say, not always, but likely gone at the end of the year, and it's time to go. And if you can trade and get something for now and keep these guys at the end of the year, you trade something out of the farm system. That's never bothered me. I so many of your great prospects turn into Nate Pearson, a guy with 18 innings in the big leagues can't stay healthy at all. I go back to trading Jeff Kent for David Cohn. I do that 100 times out of 100. And I know Kent's a borderline Hall of Fame, but they don't win without Cohn.
Let's not forget they're coming home this weekend, and that's a big deal as far as this is concerned. I think it would be hard to match the enthusiasm that they've got with what they think is going to be met by the fans in the stands and on TV and everywhere else. It'll be hard to come to that environment and say, oh, by the way, we've traded Marcus Semien. So I doubt that you're going to see that. And I think they are motivated to see how much they can squeeze out of this season because they're playing at the Rogers Center. If they were stuck in Buffalo all year long, stand pat, get the best out of whatever there is to get this season, I would completely understand that thinking. But I do think they're going to have to be a little more active to try to match what is coming in the return home, and that's only human nature, you know. Should be as excited as everybody else to see, can they get into the playoffs? And if they can, how many people are going to be at the Rogers Center if they can win a wild card game, then get into a wild card, get into a division series with a team that hits as well or better than anybody else? Pitching has got to get revamped somehow.
Sure. I mean, the dilemma you have, David, is that, and as you well know, is that right now there are going to be limited to 15,000 people in the stands, not 50,000. Mm-hmm. So the economic impact is going to be significantly less. And they'll be able to sell, we think, those 15,000 seats, whether they ever win another game or not. The demand is as high as it's probably ever been. For people just want to get out and want to see a baseball game. At the end of all of this, I understand the thought of trading Semien. And although as a fan that I'm not comfortable with that, I understand the logic. But if you don't get a pitcher back for Semien of some significance, and I'm really not even talking about a bullpen guy, I'm talking about a starting pitcher who's a top three guy. What's the point?
Well, there isn't anybody that like that. If you could trade Marcus Semien and get Max Scherzer as a rental, now Max Scherzer is not coming here, I don't think. But if you could do that, you wouldn't do that, would you?
Well, I'm not big on the rental guys, and yet rental guys have been significant in the history of the Blue Jays in terms of them achieving success. So, what do I know?
I think if there was another pitcher that we could name,
right,
that would make sense in a big deal for Marcus Semien, then all right, you sit down, you look at it. But I don't think that pitcher exists. It's not Jose Barrios, is it, Park?
No, I don't.
He's a free agent.
So because anyway, Semien, I'm not saying they're trading Semien. I love the guy. I think he's been great. But you know, he is going to be a rental for whomever gets him. So you don't give up Barrios for a rental of Marcus Semien,
of course,
for a last place team, the Twins. You don't give up Merrill Kelly, an inning eating, you know, mid level pitcher, for a rental of Marcus Semien if you're Arizona on a last place team. So you know what I mean? Like it's only a contender is gonna trade for a Semien type, and what contender is gonna give up pitching right now? Everybody wants pitching. I mean, me, the whole division is right now, it's hanging on what the Yankees do after that trade last night. I don't understand what they did last night, but clearly there's something else coming. I mean, the Yankee bullpen, as you know, has just been disgraceful this year. It's terrible. And they trade two relievers last night for a player to be named later. They're clearly opening up space for something. Something big is coming. There's no other way to figure it, I think. So depending what they do, it could, you know, set off the dominoes in the division.
I kind of take the Yankees out of my thinking. I don't see that they're a factor. I mean, right now the Jays are aiming at Oakland,
right,
which is the second wild card team. Seattle. And they got to get past, like Seattle is crazy. I don't understand how they're doing it, but they got to get past them. And if you get into a wild card game, you're probably playing Tampa Bay. I don't see the Yankees as part of this. No,
nor do I, but there is something up their sleeve. I think the other thing you need to worry about, Seattle clearly is up to something. And Seattle's 8 games over .500. The Jays are 2 games over .500. So you also have Seattle in the mix. And somehow Anaheim got to .500 too. So Anaheim's right on the Jays' tails. So, and you know, Major League Baseball would love to see Anaheim in the playoffs because the most marketable two players in the sport are right there.
Well, you get
Ohtani and Trout.
You get Trout healthy and Rendon healthy. And now I'll put them into my thinking too, but they're behind the Yankees as far as I'm concerned. I don't see the Angels as part of this. The real the wild card is Seattle. I don't know anybody that can explain how they're doing it, what they're doing, and why they're doing it the way they're doing it. But the record speaks loudly, and they have a general manager who he might make five trades in the next 5 hours.
Yeah, and you know the other thing to consider about the Blue Jays is they're 8 games below 500 against the American League.
Right.
They're 14-4 against the National League, and what is it, 35-43 against the American League. So I'm sure if you're the front office, you're saying, well, we can't beat good teams as it is right now. How are we going to fare in the playoffs when, you know, we get fat on Texas? Okay. We get rich off certain teams and we haven't played the Tigers yet and blah, blah, blah. But the record, as David says, the record speaks for itself. They're 14-4 against the National League, and that gravy train is used up right now.
My concern for the Jays is the wear and tear on the left arms of Ryu and Ray, and whether that's got anything to do with how Matz is pitching. Maybe Steven Matz is just what he was when he left New York. But they have pushed Ryu and Ray past 100 pitches at times this season when it was needless to do it. They had big leads. I know the bullpen is shaky, but Ryu was pitching in the sixth inning, I think, of a game, or seventh inning of a game that they were leading 10-0.
Yeah.
And he was over 100 pitches. And Robbie Ray did the same thing against the Phillies. And if they were out there, you know, 1-2-3 easy innings, all right, you can make an argument that we're saving the bullpen. But they'd be out there and they'd be getting battered. So what's, you know, bring a reliever in to do that and at least save your starters. But this is not the same Ryu we saw at the start of the year. And Robbie Ray continues to remind everybody that he serves home run balls. And if they're not 1-2 your pitchers who are going to carry you in the playoffs or to the playoffs, then they have no chance.
Facetiously, the only argument I would make is there's the Toronto Blue Jays bullpen is filled with pitchers capable of giving up 10 runs in one appearance.
Yeah, so and that's
10
and
thing the, lead yeah. might not be valid.
That's the good line, but realistically,
I agree with you. I'm
you know, it's a 10 run lead. Like, if you can't hold that, drop out of the league.
I get it.
You two are the one thing I will tell you is you two are convincing me not to do any deals at the deadline, though.
I want to get to that. I want to take a break first, and we'll come back and chat about that with Dave Hodge, Dave Perkins, back after these messages. McCowan here, Shannon there, Dave Hodge, Dave Perkins, also with us today as we discuss baseball and specifically the Blue Jays as we approach the first trade deadline, which arrives at the end of this month. There has been a sense here in this conversation, and I think most conversations, of the Blue Jays chase for a wild card spot. And that really is all that is up for grabs, in all honesty. And my perspective of that is this is perilously close to being a chase for fool's gold. A wild card spot means a one game winner take all matchup where anything can happen and the best team does not necessarily win. And I'm not convinced that I would chase the wild card spot. Agree or disagree? Hodge, to you first.
Well, what we would do isn't as important as what they will do. And I'll go back to saying that they will feel that playing at Rogers Center will demand a move to get to the playoffs, or at least have September be as exciting as it can be in trying to get to the playoffs. And if they start with 15,000 fans, who knows where it goes from there? I suppose it could go down, but I think they will look at the move to Toronto as the reason to try their best to make September exciting and to grab a playoff spot. And then who knows what happens. I mean, I think, you know, Houston and the White Sox are the two best teams in the American League. And I think they'll probably play in the AL Championship Series. But, you know, you could beat somebody to get beyond the first round, beyond the wild card round anyway. And I think they'll try. And I don't know that I could tell them that they shouldn't.
Perk?
Yeah, I always want to shoot the gun. I always want to take a chance when I'm close, because nothing in the future says you're going to be close. As terrific as some of these young hitters look, I got two words for you: Gleyber Torres. You know, 38 home runs as a rookie, shortstop of the future. What a great player, blah, blah, blah. Now he's nothing. You know, he's just a guy now. 2 years later, he's not washed up. But just because a guy's great at a certain young age doesn't mean he gets better, doesn't mean he stays that great. These kids are doing really well now, some of the hitters. Like I say, I take a shot while Semien's here, while Ray is here, while Mats is here, while, you know, Ryu is still, knock on wood, healthy, you know, for his career average. So I take a shot. And like David says, now you got the Sky Dome open, you got everybody revved up and wanting to go to games and hooting and hollering and you know, you take a shot. And for some players, this would be the first time they've played in the Rogers Center as a Blue Jay too. So there's that little bit of a lift of, you know, coming quote unquote home.
Well, and speaking of the unknown, I mean, never mind the prospects who are supposed to be great and never become great. Right. Then there are the guys who reach superstar status and somehow, for whatever reason, get the big contracts and fall apart.
Right.
Francisco Lindor, Christian Yelich, some of these Blue Jays could encounter that. As great as they look as young players now, 2 or 3 years from now, you could say, what happened to him?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's the Gleyber Torres thing all over again.
Yeah, the dilemma that I have in trying to analyze this, guys, is I think the Blue Jays need more than one guy. I think they need three. I think they need a starting pitcher, and the better. And they need two guys out of the bullpen. I don't trust this bullpen for a second. And I think if you bring in two guys, they probably wind up being your eighth and ninth inning guys as often as not. You know, see Henke and Ward from days past. If they're not those guys, what's the point? And so you got to make multiple deals in order to be competitive. And I don't think you have to change a position player. I don't think you need a third baseman. I don't think getting a third baseman rather than a pitcher, either a bullpen guy or a starter, is the answer. You know, if you score 8 runs instead of 7 runs, but you're still giving up 9, it doesn't make any difference. And those are the only things that I see making a difference.
Well, here are the names that would bolster your bullpen that in order of interest, it seems, whether it be the Blue Jays' interest or other teams. Ian Kennedy,
yep.
Daniel Hudson coming back to Toronto, Mike and Richard Rodriguez from the Pirates. You want two of those guys, and how important are they if you can add them?
Perk?
Yeah, well, you always want to add pitching, right? I mean, you go right back to Gillick from day one. Never have as much pitching as you think you have. And you know, relievers, Bob, I've heard you say this for years. They go up and down because they're failed starters.
You know, dime a dozen.
And a lot of relievers go good year, bad year. And we've seen that with everybody. But the fact remains, nobody's got an airtight bullpen. You know what I mean? Nobody really has one.
But we're not talking about getting an airtight bullpen, Perk. We're right. Talking about getting a competent
bullpen. A better bullpen, yeah. A better bullpen makes this team 5, 6, 7 games over 500 instead of 2 games.
At least.
Yeah.
And here's what defines a better bullpen. Somebody whose name you've heard before, you know, like Adam Simber. All right. He seems to be doing okay. But all of the Jeremy Beasleys and Patrick Murphys and people that you have to look up in baseball almanacs are not going to be the answer. Whether Daniel Hudson is the answer, I don't know, but he's got a track record. He's been here, he's won a World Series. Rodriguez has closed for Pittsburgh, and some people think, you know, give him a better team, and obviously he'd be better. So, get somebody in here that is recognizable by name, and that makes the bullpen better. But shopping around the corner and up the alleyway to find guys, I'm sorry that, you know, I shouldn't have used Simber's name because he's done okay.
He's done a decent job. Yeah.
But they've been, you know, the others have been through here and back and forth to Buffalo, and that's, you know, you're hoping to strike gold and you're going to hit a concrete wall.
Isn't the challenge that as you said, Dave Perkins, that everybody's probably looking for pitching, is that you're going to end up paying too much for this stuff?
It's possible. It's absolutely possible. But once again, who's got pitching to trade? That's the, you know, very few names, like, and they're lousy teams. Like, as David points out, Texas has got Ian Kennedy, maybe Kyle Gibson.
But these guys, well,
Pittsburgh,
these guys are free agents. You don't have to trade for them.
Right.
But maybe forget the free agent market and just try to make a trade. We're back to taking a guy off the major league roster or a top prospect and making an actual baseball trade for an established pitcher who can come in here and be, you know, at least the third best pitcher on the staff. And because right now, you know, once you get past the first two, Manoah's, the potential is there, but, you know, do you count on him to take you to the playoffs? Do you count on Stripling to take you to the playoffs or Matz? I don't think so. And as I said, I have questions about Ryu and Ray as the season goes on. I don't see them getting better. They do appear to be getting worse.
Well, you paint a very bleak picture, Mr.
I'm not trading anybody. I'm not doing anything at the deadline then. I'm just going to try to stay the course and see what we can do and plan for next year.
The picture that isn't bleak is that this team can score 10 runs, you know, and win 10-8. And, you know, everybody loves OPS, right? That's the stat that baseball people look at first, on-base percentage plus slugging. And the Jays, you know, their OPS is 20 points ahead of Boston's. So tell me how they're, you know, so far behind the Red Sox in the standing. I don't know. But the Jays can hit their way to the playoffs as long as the pitching is adequate and as long as they do have those outbursts at the plate. But these 5-4, 3-2 games that they're losing lately, they're not gonna get to the playoffs that way, because those aren't the games that they can win often enough. Now, maybe shuffle the batting order again. Like, I shake my head and go, really? You think that that's gonna make a difference?
Yeah. They've lost 2 out of 3 since the great lineup shakeup that everybody was singing the praises. Oh, Charlie's a genius they've lost 2 out of 3. You going to blame the batting order? Of course not. They lost the game in a weekend, and I go back to fundamentals. But they have 5 leadoff doubles against the Mets, and none of them ever got even to third base, right? They lost the game there. They got a guy picked off first. They got a guy thrown out trying to steal third. It's the same old run till you're out baseball that infects this team and has for a long time. And it kills them. For all the screaming and yelling about the guys in the outfield, some of them are, you know, misjudge fly ball. Some of them they catch, some of them they don't. They throw to the wrong base, they give up. You know, they don't turn the double plays they should and we all know about the bad throws around the infield. It's a bad fundamental team. And I think that ends up hurting them as much as anything.
And no matter what your bullpen is like, no matter how strong or weak it is, there's a right way and a wrong way to handle it. And I see so often moves made by the manager, I guess, that just make no sense. In the most recent game, they're down a run in the fourth inning. Thomas Hatch is, you know, he's had enough, and you need to replace him. They bring Taylor Saucedo in, speaking of somebody that nobody had ever heard of. And he gets a third out in the fourth inning. They bring him back in the fifth, and he gets two more outs, and they remove him because the next batter is somebody who hits left-handed, and he pitches left-handed. When in the fourth inning, Burke, do you bring in a pitcher for three outs only? You know, if you're going to use, if your bullpen is slim, and you're going to use a pitcher in the fourth inning, he better still be there in the sixth. And by choice, you don't take him out after three outs, because you get to the eighth inning and now you got no moves to make, because a guy that you might have used, you've taken out after three outs in the fourth or the fifth inning. It's. You know, Ryan Barucki served a home run ball to Pete Alonso on whatever day it was, right? And the next time they play the Mets, third batter up in the inning is Pete Alonso, and who starts the inning and must face Pete Alonso?
Right.
Ryan Barucki again, and what happens? Pete Alonso hits another home run. So, you know, who's making these moves?
100% right. 100% right. And this whole organization believes that no reliever can pitch more than one inning. They have lost the concept of a long man, is exactly what David's saying. And the other day, right, you don't play batter for batter, out for pitcher in the fourth inning of a game. If you use 5, 6, 7 relievers, one guy's going to have a bad day and then you lose the game.
At least one.
Yeah. And that's Charlie's specialty, it seems, or the front office. It's more the
front to the
office.
Converted. I've been saying this for a long period of time, and we're going to be called a bunch of old men who don't recognize how the game is played today and should be played, or analytics or statistics or anything else. But the truth of the matter is, I think, David, you nailed it perfectly. This team is absent a long reliever, and historically, you got two of them because they can't pitch every day. And now when you simultaneously take starters and say you can only pitch 5 or 6 innings, you better have somebody who can go 2 or 3.
Right.
Because every once in a while, like the Hatch situation, he doesn't really have it, hasn't pitched a whole lot, 3 1/3 innings or whatever it was, 3 2/3. He's got to come out. Who's the long guy? Now, we also have to concede, in fairness, I suppose, that this team, like others, has had injuries, and specifically to their pitching staff, and don't have the full complement of people that they thought they would have at the beginning of the year. But you can't really take that into account.
Well, you could cut and paste that and say that any season, couldn't you?
Of course you could.
The two big losses are Julian Merriweather, who looked like he was going to be something really valuable, and David Phelps, who was surprisingly very effective, and they're both gone. But the rest of this bullpen was going to be there all along. You know, Romano, Dolis, Barucki, you know, a lot of these guys were slated to be in the Blue Jays bullpen from day one. So yes, two big losses. Kirby Yates,
don't forget, should be on the
list too. But otherwise, these guys were supposed to be able to handle their jobs. And, you know, Romano's the closer, is the best they've got, I guess. Simber, I think, has now become the second best. And then Saucedo has been surprisingly effective, used properly. And Trevor Richards, he's the guy, I think, who can go 2 or 3 innings. If you want to make
him Barucki, into that. Barucki should be able to. He's a former starter.
Pete Alonso isn't the only guy who's hitting Ryan Barucki.
Yeah, well, I get it. I'm just saying that he has the arm strength and the history to allow him to fit that role if you wanted him to, in any event. We probably should let you guys go.
Hey, oh, before we
get frustrated. Not surprisingly, John has another question.
Well, no, I want to go get away from baseball for 5 minutes because you guys are in tune with everything. Are you watching the Olympics? Are you enjoying the Olympics, Perk?
I've watched a couple of things at night, and you know, if there's a medal race on, and I'll sit there and hooray, Penny, like everybody else. It really is lacking for me when there's no people in the stands, there's no atmosphere, there's no, you know what I mean? It's just, it's like a TV studio thing.
Yep.
And I don't get it. You know, everything's motherhood, everything's wonderful. All the Olympic themed commercials drive me crazy. So it's hard to get into this, especially with the time difference, you know. You wake up in the morning and somebody won a bronze medal in, judo or something. You go, yay, but it's hard to, I find it hard to get into. I tried watching some of the Dominican Japanese baseball game last night to watch Jose Canseco. And oh my God, all I got to see was Juan Francisco, who's got to weigh 3 bills now. Remember the guy who hit a bunch of home runs for the Jays about eight, 9 years ago, whatever. It was spectacular to see that, but that doesn't have much to do with the Olympics.
What do you mean, David?
I find it, I think the Olympics are having a tough time competing with NHL free agent frenzy. And I woke up this morning having vowed, I don't know how many years ago, never to put myself through another NHL free agent frenzy show. And set and told myself that if that's what we're going to be talking about today, I'm going to have a real interesting time listening to you guys, because I got a lot of stories about NHL free agent frenzy telecasts that probably shouldn't be repeated. John, is this a big day in the NHL TV free agent?
No, I mean it's kept the hockey world top of mind for some people. The last week has been much more. There's much more talk about hockey in the month of July than there has been ever before. But it's like going to Vegas and playing craps. You're just rolling the dice, and we can sit and have talk about, certain contracts and certain players. And then tomorrow it'll evaporate. And then we're just going to have to wait and see. So it's a cottage industry that keeps a lot of a few people busy. And then we'll see what happens when they get to camp in September.
I wanted the chance to say that this guy Cap Space is really something, because he is so important for so many teams, and I don't know how he finds the time to put on all these uniforms, but man, oh man, here's this player and that player and 3 draft picks, and in return, we would like cap space.
Yeah,
and I mean, in baseball, it's somewhat the same, it's and MBA grads and students must love following sports these days. But the salary cap, I hated it from day one, and it keeps getting worse in terms of ruining interest in the game itself.
And cap space has replaced future considerations as that denomination on the other side of the trade, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't see a lot of fans, making banners and holding parades to celebrate the addition of cap space for their favorite team.
But if Tampa wins the cup for the third year in a row, cap space might be one of the 52 names on the cup, Dave.
Well, give you know what put cap put. Put cap space on the Conn Smythe trophy then, and let's make it official, shall we?
Well, I got an idea. At some point, we should get together and discuss this very topic as a topic for a program. What would professional sports look like now, today, if a salary cap, salary caps were not in place, would the economics be such that these sports would be in great peril? I think it's a worthwhile topic to discuss.
Well, here's, I'll answer it before we get to it in detail. There would be good teams and there would be bad teams.
That's right.
Would there be as many teams?
Hopefully not.
Well, that's the other part of the equation is, would that all be bad? Look, let's save that for another time. We'll remind the producer to perhaps set up that conversation.
He might be on hiatus.
In your future.
He might be on hiatus.
The salary cap for this show is perfect.
Yes, and it is. No, but it's all guaranteed money, Dave, because everybody's over 35.
Mr. Hodge, Mr. Perkins, always our pleasure. We thank you so much for taking a few minutes for us. Have a good day, good week, good month, whenever, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
Take care. Thanks,
we hope.
Back after these messages. And we are back, McCowan, Shannon. Thanks again to Hodge and Perkins.
Yeah, boy, they were. We've had the last couple of days. We have had guys, Devlin and Smith, Perkins and Hodge. They get on rolls, don't they? They get on rolls.
Well, the intriguing thing is with the two basketball guys. They were very positive, very pro Raptors.
Yeah.
Our friends, the two Daves,
get off my lawn.
We're not quite as positive on the potential of the Toronto Blue Jays. And to be honest with you, I agree with them.
Yeah. But by the way, the confluence of this week, though, when you think about it, there's a good word. The confluence of this week, NHL is doing their free agency starting today. NBA draft is Thursday night. Major League Baseball trade deadline, the 31st. We've never seen this before, so much of the three sports all at the same time. And hopefully we never see it again.
Yeah, I do too.
But it's difficult at times to keep track of, okay, what trade deadline are we talking about? What deadline's over here? What draft is going on? It's been nuts for the last 7 days, and it's going to be crazy for another four or five.
I'll tell you what, I've been in this business for so long now. It's mandated that you pay attention, at least at some level, to all of this ancillary stuff beyond games, results,
etc.
You kind of have to. But there are times when I sit back and I wonder, especially like this year, if I didn't have to do this, would I give a crap about free agent signings? Who's going when? Would I be glued to my television set or my radio or the newspaper or online to find out all this information? I don't think I would. I think I'd be perfectly okay with finding out tomorrow or the next day or 2 weeks from now, waking up and going, hey, how'd that guy get there?
Yeah, it's a really good point. But remember, this is the time of year where there's no rights fees paid for there. You know, there's no single entity that is carrying that game. So this becomes a feeding frenzy of anybody who believes that they're in the media to create opinion and content. And it grows and with social media growing exponentially, it's truly created an industry. And we have a difficult time until the guys actually gets his name on a contract or gets moved, trying to separate truth from fiction. And that's part of the challenge too, Bob, is trying to figure out what is accurate and what isn't. You're right. Wait 7 days, sit back, and then we'll look at the piece of paper and says, this guy's now playing there.
I also love entry drafts, and I love all the opinions that take place about 18-year-olds who no one has ever heard of.
Good hands, head in a swivel.
Everybody wants to be an expert and purports to be and pretends to be, and they haven't got a bleeping clue who these guys are.
This is when we used to appreciate our old buddy, Mike Babcock, because he would say the same thing about every guy.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
Good player. Oh, he's a good player.
He's a good player.
All right, let's get out of here before we annoy everybody. you want to tease anything for later in the
week? We are going to break down free agent frenzy tomorrow. Well, because some people like it, Dave.
No, Bob. No, Bob. You like it. You like it and essentially control the content of this program. And therefore, that's why we are.
Let's write that down. Clip that. Clip well, that right there.
I just follow along as I've always done my entire career.
Bob, it is time.
The only thing I do is what I'm told.
Oh, Bob, please. Okay, Bob, say goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll see you tomorrow. See you, everybody.